Welcome to Section 9, where we talk about IT and information security. I'm Damian Hall.
And I'm Dorothy.
And I know we haven't been doing these for a while, but today we're going to do a maintenance episode. And we're going to talk about our DigitalOcean servers, Automox, Fortinet firewalls, and Bitwarden password manager. And these maintenance episodes, I do them because I want to kind of review what we're doing with our IT infrastructure. You know, we have our servers, we have our patch management, we have our firewalls, and then of course we need to move to a better password manager because we're currently using LastPass and we need to migrate off of that onto something better. This is kind of interesting because we haven't been doing these for a while, and so we kind of had to remember how to do a podcast again, and I had to figure out how to plug in all of our equipment. I had planned on doing these more regularly, but work got in the way, life got in the way, and we just haven't had a chance to do these.
And we still don't just want to put an episode out just to do an episode. We want to make sure that the information that we are giving you, it's not just anything at random. We want to make sure the content is good. So,
yeah. So let's jump into our DigitalOcean servers. These are running Ubuntu. Now, when I initially set these up, this is going to be a combination of talking about Ubuntu and Automox, our patch management solution of choice. This is a cloud-managed system, and it does Mac, Windows, and Linux. We only have Windows and Linux systems, and it works really well. It's not perfect, but we're going to get into that here in a little bit. But let's talk about our Ubuntu servers. Initially, when I tried to set up the Automox to auto-patch our Ubuntu servers on a schedule, it didn't work because Ubuntu has this automated upgrade feature turned on, and so that was conflicting with Automox. Figured that out, got that taken care of, removed that setting in there to do the auto-upgrade. Then I ran into another issue, which has been in there for a long time, years, that I always thought it was an Automox issue. But Automox is supposed to be able to reboot the servers. It reboots our Windows laptops, but it doesn't reboot the servers, or it didn't before. And then I found out recently, like end of last year, that Ubuntu has an automated apt update process. So that apt is the package manager for Ubuntu. That's how you install your applications. It's also how you do your upgrades, and it's also how you update the list of applications or software that you have available to you. So you get the latest and greatest software, and you do an apt update to do that. Well, that process, I believe, was interfering with Automox. And so Automox, for whatever reason, wasn't able to maybe update the system or update apt, and then it wasn't rebooting the servers. So when you look at the overall way in which I managed a lot of our stuff, that was kind of one of those things that made things a little bit more difficult, because when you go into Automox, you see that there's an issue with your servers. And it was constantly kind of an annoying thing, because then I would have to go and reboot the servers. And I wasn't really paying attention to what was going on. And so they would be sitting there waiting to be rebooted for maybe a month. And that's not a good thing. You should be patching these things and rebooting when necessary. Not all patches require a reboot, but if there is a reboot necessary, you should be doing that. And then, you know, those patches get applied and you're more secure, especially with these particular systems that are on the internet. I needed to have that happen. So got that taken care of. Now, I don't really have to think about our Ubuntu servers because Automox and Ubuntu work well together. They're auto-updated and they automatically reboot themselves when necessary. So that's awesome. And again, I thought that was an Automox issue. So I was trying to get with support and figure out what the deal was. Turns out that I didn't have things configured properly so that it would work okay. But now that that's taken care of, it's one more thing that I don't have to really think too much about. I do need to go into the servers and double check and verify that things are working properly on a more regular basis, but that's one thing I don't have to think about. It's automated. The other thing that I want to talk about is Automox and third-party patches. So I have been neglecting the third-party patches. Towards the end of last year, I actually did double check and verify that Automox is actually auto-patching most of our applications. But one of the things that you have to take into consideration when looking at patch management solutions is that if they do offer to automatically patch things, that's nice, but you need to double check and verify that that actually works. So for the most part, I think that Automox is doing a pretty good job. There are things that get auto-updated, But a couple of things I've noticed. Wireshark is on their list of things to be patched. That does not seem to be working at all. So I need to fix that. And the fix is going to be, I create a policy to update Wireshark, and we're kind of doing it manually. I mean, it's through the Automox system, but I have to create a policy specifically for updating Wireshark. Then there is an issue with what version you're going to get from Automox when it does do the automatic updates. So PuTTY is one of them. And right now we are one version behind the latest version. So they may say that they patch your systems or third-party applications like PuTTY. That's actually true, but you need to double check and verify that it's the version you want. So for example, if we were in a situation where I said, we need the latest version of PuTTY, there's a feature in there I want, we would have to manually patch that.
So what is the reason behind them being a version behind? Is it like they look at it and they don't think it's like it may be a better version and they don't think that it's acceptable to update?
So in this case, I would say that this is not necessarily too surprising to me, because when you're looking at latest and greatest versions of software, somebody at Automox has to go find that. And then they have to put that into the system. So I'm assuming that's going to take a bit, because it would take us a bit. And then I'm assuming they may be also looking at this and going, we don't really want to kick out the latest and greatest
yet,
the day that it comes out.
Mm.
Let's wait a bit to see if there are any bugs in there, and then we'll add that in there. That's my thinking. So again, it takes time for them to find out there's a new version, takes time for them to add that to the system, and then they may be waiting a little bit for that, you know, to kind of sink in a little bit, make sure there's no bugs, and then they'll push that out. So it may be that down the road, you know, month from now, we'll get the latest and greatest version.
Makes sense.
And I'm using a month as just an example. So, you know, a month from now, I'll double check and verify the versions and see which one we have. But for the most part, I would say that Automox is doing a pretty good job of maintaining our systems. I went in there and did a little bit of a cleanup in terms of, you know, double checking and verifying policies, what's in the, you know, the third-party patch policy, what's in the patch all policy. Now, I do call that an OS patching policy, but some of the third-party applications also get patched in that process as well, because it's a patch all policy. It patches everything. And then I just exclude certain third-party applications that I know we have to kind of limit the chance that, you know, patching all things all at once would cause an issue. And so then those things that are not patched in the patch all policy, I have them in a third-party patch policy. And once a month it gets checked. And if there's an upgrade or update to an application, it's going to be installed. So overall, I think I really like Automox. I think that as I learn more about that, as I refine the policies and do some fixes there, I think we're going to be just fine. The big issue is me just going in there and double-checking and verifying that third-party applications get patched properly. Now, on our Fortinet firewalls, this is an interesting one because I kind of made a few mistakes here. So the first one is our subscription to updates and tech support expired. And I made the mistake of waiting too long and trying to do it the last minute, get us a subscription so that we can get, you know, tech support and updates. Now, what we do not have are any fancy features. I got rid of all of that because I didn't have time to go and look at all of that. And so what I need to do is find out what features within Fortinet do we really need to use in terms of firewall features, and then see if we can get those and not just pay for everything. Because originally, I got the whole package deal. I got all the features. And of course, we're not going to use all the features, but I wanted to try to learn how to use them. And I don't think we necessarily need to do that in our case. Would be nice to be able to learn something about that. If I were going to be managing Fortinet firewalls, that would be a good thing to do. But since I'm not doing that, it's not really necessary. But I do think that there are some firewall features that we do not have that are probably going to be beneficial to us. For now, I think we're okay. But the first mistake I made was waiting until the last minute. And then another mistake I made was that I purchased 3 subscriptions because I had made a mistake in the way I purchased them. And I'm not entirely sure exactly what I was supposed to do and how I was supposed to do that. I was just rushing to try to get that in at the last minute and made some mistakes. Now, I bought these on Fortinet or firewall.com. So it's firewalls.com because you can't, I couldn't get them direct from Fortinet for whatever reason. Went through support to try to figure out why I couldn't purchase it right from the website. They said, oh, you don't have that option. You need to go to a third party. So I went to firewalls.com, worked with them before. They seemed to be okay. And they were the ones that actually notified me that I had purchased three subscriptions. They charged me for one, didn't charge me for the other two at some point. Actually, I think they tried to do a refund. And then I reached back out to them through tech support and I said, hey, what's going on with one of my orders? I'd like that one to actually be processed. And they went ahead and processed that. And I was able to get our subscriptions for both of our firewalls because we have two. But it was kind of nice to see that even before I had a chance to reach out to them, they'd already sent me an email saying, hey, we noticed you purchased three. Was this a mistake? And of course, it was a mistake. I only wanted two, not three. So that was kind of nice of them to do that. Now, a bigger issue that I found out because I was looking at the firewall logs, which I think only one of the firewall logs is actually working. I'll have to look into that as well. So that's another issue. One of our firewalls will email me the logs and they're kind of like alerts. The other one doesn't seem to be doing that. And I don't know why. I'm going to have to go look at the configuration for that. But when I was looking through that, I normally don't really pay too much attention to it. But this time around, I actually went ahead and read what the thing said, paying attention to some of the details. And it looked odd. Like it didn't look correct to me. There was something about it that was I was not happy with. So when I went into that particular firewall, looked at the configuration, I realized that on the WAN interface, the one that's connecting to the internet side, I had configured, or what was configured, is admin access to the firewall. So when you are looking at some of these devices, there's going to be an admin process for getting into the thing and doing the configuration. All firewalls have that. All network equipment has that. Sometimes, you know, if it's a network device, you go through SSH. In this case, it's a web interface for the firewall. And you can control what interfaces have access to that administrator page. You still have to log in. So if I provide that interface to the WAN side, what somebody will see when they connect to it is it will ask for username and password. I don't want that to be available on the internet because then anybody can try to log into the thing. And that's bad because at some point, somebody might figure out what the username and password actually is and be able to get in. Fortunately, I did not have the default password on there. So that was a big step in the right direction. And nobody, as far as I can tell, was able to log into our firewall and make changes. But it was available online.
But do you have SSH access?
SSH access is not available. The only thing available is the web interface. So in this case, we only have web interface access. I think SSH is a feature within Fortinet, but in this case, that's not available on the WAN side.
Okay.
So that's a huge mistake on my part. And one of the reasons why I'm sharing this is because this is something that can happen to anybody. And this is the reason why you should have within your IT process, your security process, a double check and verify. It's the reason why you have third parties come in and look at your systems and look at your overall security program and maybe do a pen test. I mean, I think I would save the pen test for last when you have all of your processes in place. Then you can say, hey, we have our processes in place. We've done a bunch of stuff. Let's do a pen test.
You still have to have that process documented.
Exactly. You want all that stuff documented. You want to double check and verify. And the reason you double check and verify is this example right here. You want to double check and verify that your configuration is correct. You want to double check and verify that your configuration hasn't changed. You want to double check and verify that the configurations that you have, whether it's on a firewall, a workstation, a server, that it matches what your configuration is supposed to be. So you should have documentation that says, here's how the firewall is supposed to be configured. here are all the settings, here are all the things that we want to have. When you go and do your double check and verify, you look at the documentation, you look at the firewall, and you match the two.
Well, and if you're going to be doing pen testing or some kind of security report for your company or what have you, you want to make sure you provide them to what your process is supposed to be so they can actually say, okay, this is in place. Is it really in place? And if it is, then that's a lot less legwork that they would have to do. Wouldn't you think so? Or would that matter?
No, that does matter, because when you're going in and doing an assessment, you're double checking and verifying. You know, do you have a process? Do you have documentation? Can I double check and verify? And if there's no documentation, how do you double check and verify? And how does the customer double check and verify? There's no way for them to do that either if there's no documentation for that. So that's this particular situation is one of the bigger issues I found in my little brief sort of audit of what we do and how we do things. That was a little bit of a mistake on my part. But that's something I'm going to be working on. Now, let's look at Bitwarden and LastPass. So LastPass had their hack end of last year. More stuff has come out since then that makes the whole hack even worse. So just the way in which they've done things and the way they manage things, a lot of people are saying, I've had enough. Let's get off LastPass. Let's never use them again. And I would recommend that if you're using LastPass, find a way to get off of that. I decided to use Bitwarden partly because I'd already paid for the thing and partly because it's a good product. And the choice was either Bitwarden or 1Password. And so either one of those is going to be fine, I think. Again, I had already paid for Bitwarden. I had already tried to use it before. There's some things in there that I do like. But again, you can go with Bitwarden or 1Password. You just have to do an evaluation and see which one you think is better for you. And then either one's going to be fine. But to migrate to Bitwarden, I'm slowly moving my stuff over, double checking and verifying that I have them in there, that they all work, and deleting duplicate, passwords that are in the system. Because when I initially migrated, they all kind of, some of it came over, but then it went back to 1Password or LastPass. And so when I did the second migration, it was a double entry for a lot of things because I already had some stuff in there. And so now when I go to a website, I go to a server, I go to a system that I have a password for inside Bitwarden, it shows two. So I got to pick one and then delete the other one. So it's going to be a little bit of a slow process. And some of that is because you and I have shared passwords. So when you migrate your stuff over, I'm sure a lot of those shared passwords are going to come over with it. So it's going to be a little tricky to figure out how we're going to do that and maybe eliminate some of that. But I suspect that it's going to be a little bit of a process and we're not going to be able to avoid having duplicates in there. So something to think about. And I'm going to have to make sure that things that are duplicates that we share, we delete the correct one so that we have the right password.
And I think that should be something that we need to create a cleanup process for that kind of thing. On any kind of migration, you got to make sure that if there is any kind of duplication, that it needs to be cleaned up. And how do you identify what to clean up, and how to do it?
Yeah, and some things you may have a better process. In this case, I think it's going to be a tedious one of we just have to log into things and say, okay, this is the one that we want. This other one is the old one. Let's delete that.
Could we just, and this is just my baby mind, could we just migrate and then do a change of password instead of having to do a duplicate?
No, because some of those things are going to already have a password. And so you want to make sure you have the correct one, the most up-to-date one.
Right. But don't you want to say, okay, reset it?
Well, but we may want to do that. That's something we may want to take into consideration as we migrate to Bitwarden. But I may have already changed a password.
Oh, so I see. And since we share those, that may be...
Yeah, so when you migrate over, you may bring that old shared password with you for systems that we share, for admin passwords we have for certain things. And so when that comes over, you're going to bring an old password that maybe I already updated. And so now we have to pick the correct one and delete the one we don't want.
And then update it. Okay.
So yeah, there's a bunch of things that we have to think about. Changing of the passwords is one thing, because we don't want to have old passwords that were in LastPass that could have been compromised as part of our new Bitwarden process. So eventually we're going to want to make changes to a lot of the passwords that we have. But for now, I'm more concerned about getting off LastPass and moving over to Bitwarden and making sure that the right passwords are in there. And if we have duplicates, we get rid of the right duplicate, right? Yeah. The old one goes away and not the new one. But yeah, that's it for now. Again, this is not, I think the worst thing I've done so far is that mistake with the Fortinet firewall and not managing that in a way that makes more sense, doing things ahead of time instead of waiting to the last minute, double checking and verifying the configuration and making sure we don't have things like the admin interface available to the internet side of things. So,
Well, and one thing like that, even though, you know, it's one thing, it's still a big vulnerability on a network. You know, we're lucky that, you know, we're just babies and we just have our own systems, but that kind of a mistake in a big organization could be detrimental. So when you create your process for setting up things and do your configurations so you can double check and verify, you know, it's something that is important. And as you know, a lot of the organizations don't have the documentation for that kind of thing.
No, they don't. And so going forward, what I want to do is focus on our documentation, our processes, policies, and procedures. And we'll talk about that on the show. So we, you know, we can kind of go through some of those things. And that's kind of why I like doing these, because it kind of forces me to think about, how do I explain this to other people? And then if I can't explain it to other people, then that means
you don't understand it.
I don't understand it. And we may be missing something in our policies, procedures, documentation,
yeah.
Our double check and verify process may be broken. So those are things that I'm taking into consideration. And so I think that's the direction that I'm going to go with on the show, is to kind of focus on those things, because those are the things that I think, like you said, a lot of organizations don't have them. And it kind of helps me and forces me to really think about what I do with our systems, because we don't have a lot, but they're kind of complicated and I use them. So We have our VMware environment. I use that for testing. We have our VMs in there. There's some production stuff in there. We have our cloud servers. We have our 365. So we have a fair amount of things. And while they may not require a whole lot in terms of maintenance or management, because there's only two of us here, we don't have end users calling in all the time requesting things, we still have fairly complicated systems that need to be managed properly, updated, that kind of
thing. No, they do. I mean, we got lucky because we're small and nobody's exploited that, but it is a vulnerability. And you know, even in an organization, you got to have, if you don't have it documented and you don't have someone to double check and verify, how does your admin dude know that? You know, it's like, does he know it's been configured? Does he assume it's been configured correctly? Does he even check for that kind of thing?
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's it for now. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at support@section9.us. If you want to take a look at our show notes, those are going to be on our website. And if you haven't subscribed to our show, please do so. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.